There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We're joined in the studio by sporting legend Robbie Greenfield, or sporting presenter.
That is.
Presenting legend Robbie Greenfield.
My praise. How are you?
I'm just trying to be nice to you because I want you to do the last word later.
You know I'm locked into that anyway.
It's part of the contract.
Yeah, exactly.
I got it written in.
You don't need to be nice. You can dispense with the niceties. But I'm very well. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Your partner in crime is not here, though. He's in Abu Dhabi.
He is, yeah. Chris is down at the Mubadala World Tennis Championship, keeping an eye on what's going on down there. We've got matches. We've got live tennis coming up in... it's ongoing, in fact. Pablo Carreño Busta is taking on Kevin Anderson. That is for a match potentially tomorrow against Dominic Thiem, the world number five, who I was chatting to this morning down there. And then a little bit later on at 7 o'clock, Roberta Batista Agut will take on the young Russian star, just 20 years of age, Andrei Rublev. Lots of prospects or a lot of excitement surrounding his young career. But the interesting line that came out of a chat with Dominic Thiem this morning was that he believes, and this sort of caught me by surprise because I wasn't expecting him to say this, but he thinks that the toughest opponent he's ever had is Novak Djokovic.
Really?
Not Rafa Nadal on clay, not Roger Federer, but Djokovic at his peak is the best player that Dominic Thiem has ever come up against.
Could I just go back a few seconds there, Robbie? Was that you dropping another name, another big interview you've been dealing
with? Yeah, just another big interview, yeah. Yeah, you know, world number five, 8-time ATP Tour winner, Dominic Thiem.
Is that why you look so smart today?
Exactly. Yeah, I've got a dress to impress for these guys. But yeah, I thought that was interesting though.
Yeah,
Novak at his best. And it's an opinion I've always held as well.
Really?
I have, yeah.
Chris would disagree with you.
I know he would, and which he's not here to argue the case for Roger Federer. I mean, no doubt that Roger Federer is the greatest tennis player of all time. No one's disputing that. These are the records. They speak for themselves. These guys are measured on Grand Slams. Roger has 19. Rafa has 16 now. And Novak only has 12. But in the purple patches of his career, when he's played his best tennis, when he won 4 Grand Slams in a row, I don't think anyone has played tennis like that. And I agree with Dominic. Now Dominic Thiem agrees with me. And he's actually had the pleasure of actually going up against these guys.
There could be something in that, because somebody might hold the records, but there could be a more daunting opponent. Someone who's
going to
push
you,
challenge you mentally in a different way to someone else. And maybe that's where he's coming from.
I think just because he was just impossible to beat for a time. And as good as Roger's been over such a long period of time, there have been moments where, you know, he's been a bit more vulnerable. And he played brilliant tennis last year, but Novak's had patches where he's literally been impossible to beat. He's lost like 3 matches in a season. So, yeah, which is not impossible to beat, but it's extremely difficult. And winning 4 Grand Slams in a row, well, that's something that Roger's never done. It's something that Rafa's never done either. So, yeah, I think it was an interesting line, and we'll look forward to potentially those two meeting in Saturday's final. Excited as well about Serena. She'll take on Yelena Ostapenko on Saturday before the final down at the tennis. But we'll keep you updated on the matches, the live tennis going on down there between Carreño Busta and Kevin Anderson, which is now ongoing, and then Batista Agut and Andrei Rublev a little bit later.
And what can we look forward to down there tomorrow? Of course, you boys are going to be there all weekend. There's quite a few matches tomorrow. And of course, you've mentioned Serena Williams, who we could never forget now, Robbie,
no,
you and I.
No, of course not. No, absolutely. No, there's a lovely tennis village down there. There'll be star player clinics. There's hospitality to enjoy. There's autograph signing. There'll be a fifth place playoff between the two losers of tonight's matches. And then from 5 o'clock, Dominic Thiem will take on either Carreño Busta or Kevin Anderson. Those two met in the semi-final of the US Open back in September, and Kevin Anderson won that one on his way to the final against Rafa Nadal. And at 7 o'clock, Novak will make his long-awaited return. So that's the big one I think we're all looking forward to.
7 o'clock?
He'll play Batista Agut or Andrei Rublev.
Excellent.
And moving over to football now, and good news for Manchester City.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, Emma, again, 18 wins in a row. It's the same old story. It seems crazy. We're talking about it every time. Mm-hmm. Manchester City are just winning and winning. This just doesn't happen. But just the manner of their victories as well. 1-0 against Newcastle, but the stats tell a very different story to that, what looks like quite a close match and a tight scoreline. City had 78% of the ball, and in completing, I think, 122 passes, their central defender, Nicolas Otamendi, made more passes than in the entire Newcastle team throughout the duration of the match. Not joking. 115.
That's incredible.
Newcastle made 122 for a centre half, City's defender. So it just goes to show that the level of dominance, the level of possession they enjoy, Newcastle's tactic was obviously damage limitation to get as many men behind the ball as possible to defend deep and to close down the spaces. And that seems to be the going tactic for teams even as lofty as Manchester United against Manchester City at the moment. You know, no one really wants to play them at their own game because they just won't win. Liverpool tried it and they got taken apart, albeit when they went down to 10 men. But speaking of Liverpool, they've made the headlines because they have spent £75 million on a defender.
I know, it's kind of like, it's getting ridiculous, isn't it? £75 million on a defender is just, yeah, mind-blowing.
And the jury is out as to whether Virgil van Dijk is going to be a great addition and a great signing for them. Time will tell. It's an awful lot of money to spend on, first of all, a player who hasn't really even been playing that much this year.
How old is he, Robbie?
He's 26, so he's
potentially
he's in the middle. He's in the middle period of his career. He's not a young player anymore, but he's by no means old. So he's got quite a few good years ahead of him. But yeah, okay. The going rate had they signed him back in the summer when they made that inappropriate advance Southampton complained about, like they were trying to chat him up in a bar. Yeah. And they're not supposed to do that. They got to go through the official channels. They were going to pay £60 million. But now the price went up. Just imagine dilly-dallying and, you know, dawdling on that and making that illegal approach cost them £15 million.
That's what I was going to say. It was an expensive illegal approach, really.
It was a very expensive illegal approach. Plus, it's always complicated signing players in January because you've got to bring them into an already established team that's in the middle of the season. And he will be a good addition to Liverpool's back line. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, the Jurgen Klopp's defensive deficiencies for that side. They've conceded 23 goals in 20 games. So they're conceding at a rate of over a goal a game. And they need to shore it up. If they want to close the gap between Chelsea and Manchester United ahead of them in the table, and ultimately, if they want to take on the might of Manchester City, who just look unbeatable at the moment and invincible, then they're going to have to sort their defence out. And Virgil van Dijk, clearly a step in the right direction. The fact that there aren't that many good defenders around at the moment, certainly not ones that are available, meant that Southampton could basically charge whatever they wanted to. So, I mean, just £75 million.
I know.
Just think about that. What could you do with that money?
Not buy
you could
defender.
Buy you could buy super yachts. I mean, and I'm talking like oligarch style. You really could.
We know where your money's going to go. Just moving back to the tennis really, really quickly, Robbie. We've had a text in. Shruti obviously agrees with you. Djokovic has beast mode. When he switches that on, he's scary in a good way. She's a massive tennis fan, as you know, Shruti. But also James, the Kenyan gunner, he says, how about this? Both Federer and Nadal are the greatest tennis men's players of all time. At the peak of their forms, Federer dominated the Grand Slams on grass, while Nadal had a stranglehold on Roland Garros among athletes. So, I mean, not really necessarily agreeing with everything that you said, but take their point. They're both very successful in different surfaces.
Yeah, I mean, Nadal's won 16 Grand Slams and 10 of them have come at the French Open. So the vast majority of his success has been on clay. Mm. He's been a great all-court player. He's won Wimbledon. I think at the start of his career, everyone doubted whether he could take that very specialised clay court game with the heavy topspin and be successful on the other surfaces. But he's been able to do that. He's won all four of the Grand Slams. So, you know, Nadal's place in the pantheon is not under question. And I wouldn't say, for me, it's very simple. I measure it on Grand Slam success. You could have this debate all the time. But I just think at their best, Novak did play the best tennis. And that's sort of, it's a bit like saying at his best, even though he's four majors behind Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods was the greatest golfer ever lived, because there was a period of time where he played golf like no one had ever seen before.
Yeah.
And I think the same could be said of Novak during, well, two purple patches, really, one in 2011 and the other a couple of years ago in 2015.
And just finally, Robbie, looks like England are on course to get the wooden spoon.
They're getting
no other way of
a great concert. Are you talking about the cricket? Take it.
Yeah.
Well, they're certainly doing a good job at making some consolation kind of prizes out of this, because the head scratching continues. We talked about it yesterday. Alistair Cook had made 104 by then. A day later, he's on 244 not out. That's the highest runs ever scored by a visiting batsman at the MCG.
On
he's
the final
beaten the
test
legend
as well.
Viv Richards, who scored 208 for the West Indies. It's the penultimate test. So there is one to come, which is just going to, you know, prolong England's misery, I think,
but
even
it's
further.
Just, but where was he hiding?
I don't know.
Well, where was this form?
Because he was being outscored by Pat Cummins, who's a fast bowler up until this point, but he's made 244 not out, and he's been ably assisted by the likes of Chris Wokes and Stuart Broad, who made 56. Where's his form? In this match, he's taken four wickets, which was completely missing in the three matches that counted up until this point, and then he's made 56 with the bat. Obviously, Australia, they're definitely missing Mitchell Starc, who's been their star bowler, among many others. But it's for an England fan, it's just frustrating, I think.
Yeah, it's not a pleasure to watch. And even for Australian fans now, there's nothing really in it. There's nothing in it for them, not even the pride now. England.
They have hammered them, but they'll have wanted to have secured the whitewash. Looks like that's not going to happen now because England are 491 for 9. So they've got a lead of 164 runs. It was close for a period, but Broad and Cook have put on 100 for that final wicket stand. So, yeah, Australia will be trailing and will be looking to play potentially for the draw. But we'll see how that one unfolds. Either way, as you say, you know, we made a few comments on the show last night, and people were adamant that it was still a great performance from Alistair Cook. There's no doubt it is. To go and make 244 in Australia as a visiting batsman at the MCG, it's a tremendous achievement. It's just a shame that the Ashes aren't on the line while he's doing it.
Yeah, too little, too late, Alistair.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.